In 2017, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio announced that he would close the Rikers Island Jail complex within 10 years. It's common knowledge that Rikers is riddled with inhumane conditions, rampant abuse, and that 80% of the population there are just there awaiting trials, and some of them for many years. And the majority of the people in the prison itself of people of color. So he's closing it, and that sounds good, but there's a catch. And the catch is the plan to replace the jail comes with a new plan to institute new prisons in every borough in New York except Staten Island. Prison abolition activists have mobilized in protests of the Ford Foundation and other financial backers and supporters against creating new prisons to replace Rikers Island. And they have gathered a budget of over $10 billion for these new jails. Activists says this will continue the legacy of mass incarceration. We welcome Brittany.
Thank you for having me.
And we welcome Ngozi.
Thank you for having me.
To the real news, and they are going to explain to us what's going on around the closing of Rikers and the building of new prisons. Brittany, can you give us a background? How did this actually come about?
Yes, so I would say thank you again for having us here. The call for closure of Rikers Island has spanned over the 30 years, right? Mm-hmm. And so in 2016, Glenn Martin, who is an advocate, called for the closure of Rikers Island immediately. I also worked on closing Rikers Island with him. And I would say the call did not come from Mayor Bill de Blasio. It came from community members directly impacted and allies across New York City that literally said Rikers Island needed to close. And so in 2019, we're here, right? Mayor Bill de Blasio said, hey, I'm going to close Rikers Island and I'm going to build 4 new jails in replacement. But the catch is there is no legal binding agreement to close Rikers Island. But there is a legal binding agreement through this ULUP process that's happening to build 4 new jails. So they're asking community members to take risk that will lead us in having the same amount of cages in New York City when the war on drugs is at its highest.
Okay. So, and Ngozi, can you kind of give us exactly where we are today with this whole struggle?
So currently, it's September 30th. There is a city council public meeting on the 2nd. And we are currently trying to just push city council members to have more public meetings so that they can hear feedback from community members. There was only one public meeting on September 5th to discuss the jail plan after community board hearings. And it's just something that city council members aren't exactly being transparent about. The fact that it's going to cost $11 billion. The fact that community members in all these boroughs have been asking for improvements to NYCHA, for public transportation, for childcare, right, for decades. And there's always an excuse of, oh, we don't have that money. But here we have we have $11 billion for these jails, and it's good for your community. Like, this is what you wanted, right? And so there's a call to action with activists, organizers, community members to say, is this really what you want? And it's not what we want. And we're just trying to get city council to hear us and vote no on this plan.
Okay, so the Ford Foundation is putting up some of this money. What other large nonprofit institution or foundations are working with this?
Yeah, so I can take that. Open Society Foundation, the Toe Foundation, the J.M. Kaplan Fund are all supporting. They supported the Lipman Commission, which was a commission that was set up in 2017 that basically said, will report back to City Council to say whether or not Rikers Island should have closed. They funded that commission. They went along after funding the Lipman Commission, they funded the nonprofits who are now supporting the mayor's plan and who also sat on Mayor Bill de Blasio's task force to close Rikers Island. And so when we're talking about the role of these nonprofits and these foundations, when we were having these community meetings, when the community just, for the last couple of months, are finding out about this jail plan, these nonprofits were literally sitting on the same side as the city, basically telling community members who are impacted by incarceration, who need housing, who support homeless folks, you need to get on board with this plan because it's going to happen regardless.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And Gozi, can you tell me, you said there's no real written contract about the closing of Rikers, but there's a contract for building these new prisons. What are gonna happen? I mean, what's gonna happen to the people in Rikers? Is there any kind of plan to start transferring them out? I notice it's like a 10-year process. Mm-hmm. So this jail could be in existence for the next 10 years while the other jails come online, and they all five of them could be online. What's the situation with that?
I think you nailed it right there. I mean, so basically they've already started moving people from Brooklyn Detention Center back to Rikers. Onto other facilities on Rikers that they haven't really been using. They've been moving men to Rosie's, which is a women's facility. And so they're saying, oh, we're gonna close Rikers. There's no legal binding anything. So in all likelihood, if they do pass this, they're going to open these four new jails that are going to be hundreds of feet high, and they might not close Rikers. And there's going to be whomever is the mayor, whoever is in city council at that point in time has no legal obligation to seeing the closure of Rikers. So we're really pushing council members to vote no, because there's no transparency. There's no actual design plans. There's a lot of issues. People shouldn't be in cages regardless. But they're voting on approving this thing and that they don't have much information about. We don't even know how DOC is going to reduce the numbers of staff that they have. They have not laid out anything.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying a vote, somebody just mentioned the 2nd, October the 2nd. Is that what I'm hearing, that this Wednesday, there's going to be a vote that's going to decide to push this forward?
No. So the vote to hopefully not push it forward, is happening on October 17th.
Okay.
This Wednesday, Brittany, could you say more about that?
Yes, so this Wednesday, basically, City Council just introduced three new bills to try to whip the vote from City Council members. It's one more thing that I would like to say before I go into that. This plan is supposed to close Rikers Island, but it will require out of the Department of Corrections mouth at a city commission meeting said that the entire jail population has to be moved to Rikers Island while these jails are being built. And there's no legal binding agreement for Rikers Island to close. And we know that ICE is in our communities really, really deep. There's no analysis around the impact of immigration when we know that ICE is expanding. Mm. So the vote on October 2nd is in relationship to these three bills that basically say, hey, here are a little bit of community investments so that that city council can hush their mouths and vote yes for the plan, versus saying, you all have been thinking about building jails for 2 years and you have not, in these 2 years, thought about community investment at all, and you wait 3 weeks for the vote to say, this is the time, we're going to give you what you want. It's a negotiation of Black and brown people being caged.
So now the organization Ford Foundation and other organizations that's behind this have up to this point had been acting as if they were in support of the community, but they're really doing this against the community. Is there anybody, activists or so on, that's advocating for alternative methods, a better way of spending that money, a better way of dealing with the criminal justice system? In Ngozi, you want to take that?
I would say that we are. We have an abolition plan. It's 55 pages long. We list out everything that the city can do with $11 billion for communities. Without taking money from these huge organizations that have always, always been complicit in government surveillance. They're essentially another branch doing like the work of the government when it comes to negotiating, right, Black and brown communities. And they are funding a lot of, you know, criminal justice organizations that are advocating for new jails, but, you know, also calling themselves abolitionists and co-opting the abolition movement. So what we're proposing is that we will bail people out ourselves, kind of thing, like mutual aid is what we're practicing, and we don't have to rely on the state or the government to do the work we know that we're capable of doing. And so that is what we're proposing. We don't want to rely on that anymore. Even though we have a plan, they can do that. We've laid everything out for them, and we don't get paid for this. It's their job to figure that out. It's their job, and they aren't willing. So they're throwing $100 million into for negotiating community investments, and when there's $11 billion on the line, it doesn't make sense.
Brittany, can you kind of tell me, now these jails are supposed to be 50 stories tall. That's, I mean, they are going to be the highest, tallest jails in the world. Yes. And I was under the impression that there was a decrease in crime and criminal activities in New York State, and that they wasn't locking up as many people. Why all of a sudden 50-story high jails? It seems to be a conflict with the facts on the ground. What's is this some sort of an economic thing or what?
We actually believe it's an economic issue. I just want to uplift, like, these largest jails in the world we know are equivalent to slave dungeons if you look exactly what they're trying to do. And so when we're talking about this, the one thing we have to say is that there is a fire hazard to have the largest jails in the world and not have a plan for if a fire happens in a building, how are all of the people that will be incarcerated will actually get out of the jails, right? We know at the same time that this is happening, Mayor Bill de Blasio is basically selling out one third of NYCHA. NYCHA is affordable housing and the largest affordable housing in the world, right? And so these, what he's proposing with RAD and other ways to fix NYCHA, which they are actually living in horrible conditions, will require them to move out, and possibly there are a lot of people being evicted through this process. Also, they're trying to give people Section 8 to move out of these buildings. So these are Mayor Bill de Blasio's way of giving back to his real estate developers that actually helped him run for office. The same with Corey Johnson, who will also be running for mayor 2021. And so in New York City, we know across the country, I'm not naive to say the pay to play in politics, but they have created a whole monopoly of pay to play where anyone who wants to get something done or something from the state has to pay their cash up front.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Ngozi, can you tell me what can happen between now and October 16th and 17th to maybe have some impact on that vote? What can activists do? What can supporters do, et cetera?
People can call their local city council members. I believe they can submit written comments still also to city council. We are out here mobilizing. We have events with community members all of the time. So right now we're just planning different events for Indigenous Peoples Day. We're planning events for communities in each borough so that they can stay, you know, in the loop and engaged, because all hands on deck October 16th and 17th. And we are going to be really making some noise and letting people know. People's council members are kind of like, I don't know, but are also receiving pressure from the speaker, from Councilmember Levin, to vote yes, so that their, you know, so that their district can get $1 million, right? And we need the people to push back and say, like, we're not up for negotiation. And we don't negotiate with people that try to leverage us for pennies, for breadcrumbs, right? And so I highly encourage folks to go on nonewjails.nyc, look at our abolition plan, reach out to us, email, Instagram, Twitter. We are always looking for people to make phone calls to city council members, because they're scared, and we want them to continue to receive information that this is not acceptable, and the entire country is watching. There have been jail fights in Atlanta and LA, and people are looking at us to see what's going to happen here.
Okay, so we're going to revisit this. We'll probably get back together probably in a couple weeks after this vote, and we'll have some more discussion on this. I thank both of you for joining me, Brittany and Gozi. Thank you both for joining me for this episode of Rattling the Bars. And thank you for joining the Real News Network.